I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Our guest, psychologist Michael Slepian, who has spent his career studying secrets, says that most of us are carrying an average of 13 secrets at any given time. Now, some are benign and some can be so burdensome that they can isolate us, make us feel lonely. Slepian's parents had kept a family secret from him and his brother for many years until they finally revealed the truth. His mother told him she got uncomfortable over time keeping the family secret secret. Michael Slepian has collected the secrets of 50,000 people from around the world for his KeepingSecrets.org database and found some common universal themes that should not be surprising. We keep secrets about lies we've told, romantic desires, including affairs, money problems, emotional struggles, to name just a few. Michael Slepian joins us today on Radio Times to talk about the power of secrets, when to keep them, and what to do when they rule our lives. His new book is The Secret Life of Secrets, How Our Inner Worlds Shape Well-Being, Relationships, and Who We Are. Michael Slepian, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
Well, let's begin with your family secret that you divulge in your new book. What had your parents withheld from you and your brother?
So what was happening around this time, this is 2013, so just about 10 years ago now, and I had been doing research on secrecy just for a year or two, so it was still brand new research at the time, and I was on interview at Columbia, and the whole day was showcasing this brand new research on secrecy, and it would be a day that went all the way until the evening. We had dinner with my, you know, the people who would become my future colleagues, and then we went out for drinks. And around midnight, I get a call from my dad, and I'm still at drinks with these folks. And so I let it pass. But I think that's so weird that he would call out of the blue, especially at midnight. And so then he calls again, and I go, oh, no, something bad must have happened, something really urgent that he needs to talk to me about. And so I returned his phone call. We finished drinks, and he said, Michael, I need to tell you something. Maybe you should sit down for this. And then he goes on to tell me that he is not biologically able to have children. Hmm. He's telling me that he's not my biological father. And of course, something like that is totally shocking to learn. But I immediately accepted this new understanding of the reality of my family, where I wasn't biologically related to my dad. The bigger shock was that my younger brother, born 5 years later, was born by a different donor. And so all of a sudden, we were half brothers. And so that's really surprising, especially that. But I thought, okay, well, this is what it is, and this is okay. And when I think about people I'm close to, like my friends, you know, those relationships aren't based on genetics. And so, you know, what does it matter if family relationships are based on genetics either? But what really, really shocked me was the secret keeping. And it turned out that they had been keeping the secret from me and my brother our whole lives, and everyone else in the family knew apart from us.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. Why do you think your father wanted to, and I'll say unburden that secret at that time with you? You know, it's midnight. And why do you think he chose that time to tell you?
So what had happened was my brother learned a couple days before, and they thought, okay, now we need to tell Michael too. They very rightly waited until after my interview, and that's why that timing. Could they have waited till the next morning? Probably. But that was what happened.
And for you, it's so interesting that you had already started studying secrets, something you've been doing for so many years, and yet here was this really powerful, important family secret that other people in the family knew about, but you and your brother did not.
And when I would ask my parents, not on that phone call, but on a different phone call, what was it like to keep that secret? They told me experiences that were directly in line with the research I was doing at the time, where, you know, my mom, for example, told me that what made the secret difficult to keep was not the occasional conversation when she was reminded of the secret, because that kind of secret's easy to keep. You just don't say it. Yeah. Technically, it's easy to keep. Conversationally, you know, we never asked our parents about our genetics and whether we were related to them. But she said what was difficult about the secret was having to think about the secret on her own time and starting to wonder, did we make the right decision? And that lines up with what my research shows, which is actually holding secrets back in conversation. That's the easy part. We're really prepared for those moments and don't find them very difficult on average. But what we are not prepared for is all the times our mind is going to return to this secret where we feel alone in our thoughts on the issue.
And I do want to get to that, but I'm also thinking about the rest of your family. So they knew that you and your brother were the result of a donor, in that your dad was not your biological father. But the rest of the family knew, but they had to keep that secret too.
Yeah, and was that difficult for them? I have no idea. I've only
you haven't talked to them about that.
I have. You're right. I have more conversations to have. Great question.
Oh well, very, very, very interesting. So let's start with secrets. As you say, we all have them, an average of 13 secrets that we're holding at the same time. You've got this database. You've talked to people around the world. So this is not unusual human behavior to have and hold secrets.
Not at all. It's very common to have secrets. We don't just have one secret. We have multiple secrets at any given moment. Now, not all of them are pressing. Not all of them are significant. But what's important to understand how our secrets affect us is to study the whole universe of secrets, the small ones and the big ones. And the research that came before mine would just sort of study one secret at a time, asking the question, is secrecy or bad or good? And you can't get very far when only looking at one secret at a time. When we look at a person's whole set of secrets, we can start asking, which of these secrets hurt you and why?
Well, and it's so interesting. It may be challenging to do research on secrets where you have to ask people anonymously. You have 50,000 people apply to your survey on your database to tell you, a perfect stranger, about some of their secrets. I mean, obviously it's anonymous, but nonetheless, you're asking the question that maybe most people in their lives have never asked them before. Is that a challenge?
I think it would be a challenge, or it can be a challenge, except for this great convenience that we all keep the same kinds of secrets. And so that number 13 that you mentioned, where that number comes from, is what I do in most of my studies. I show participants this list of 38 categories of secrets. And these are the themes that emerged in the thousands of responses in the beginning of this research program. And we know that that list really does a good job of comprehensively covering what we keep secret, because when we show people this list, 97% of the time they have one secret, at least one secret from the list right now. The average person has 13 secrets from that list right now. And so I help people think about all the secrets that they have. You know, some you might not have thought about in a while, and that's interesting to learn about and why. But once people see this list, they go, okay, yeah, I'm keeping that secret, and yes, that secret. And so we help people work through it. And I think it makes it easier for them to think about their secrets, and it makes it easier for us to do our research, because we can account essentially for what the secret is about and know that the things I'm talking about today generalize across all the different secrets we keep.
So what are some of the top secrets? Let's say the top five secrets on that list of 38.
Yep. So these include secrets about lies we've told, which you mentioned, romantic desire while single is another common one, issues around money, issues around sex. And then this number five is what I call extra-relational thoughts. That is, you are in a relationship and you have some kind of romantic thought about another person.
And broadly speaking, why do, you know, using those as examples, why do we keep those secrets? What do we, and who are we protecting?
You're entirely right. We are protecting something. That's the goal with most secrets. Now, who are we protecting? That will vary based on the secret. For the most part, we're trying to protect ourselves. We think people might think differently of us when we would reveal something. It often doesn't go as bad as we expect it to, and there's actually a lot to be gained by revealing these things to other people. But we're afraid it'll somehow tarnish our reputation or hurt our relationships or hurt someone close to us.
And in terms of keeping that secret, you mentioned this earlier, that and we do this because we're human beings for all the reasons that you just described. But when looking at those numbers of secrets, is it that we're embarrassed about this thing that we have done? Is embarrassment an important part of why we keep a secret?
Yes, absolutely. But the thing to keep in mind, if you're in this position where you kind of feel like you could get something out of revealing this to someone, but you're perhaps embarrassed to do so, is to remember you're not alone in having that secret. We all keep the same secrets, essentially.
And it's interesting we use a certain kind of language, like we're carrying a secret, as you referenced in this book, that if we're carrying a secret, is it a heavy load? Is it, you know, something light in a backpack? How does language reveal what that secret means to us?
So this is where this research started, and it turned out to be a pretty unusual entry point to the psychology of secrecy, but it is also what enabled us to understand that actually there's a lot more to secrecy than that very brief moment during which you're hiding a secret in conversation. And so these initial studies were interested in this metaphor that people use to talk about secrets. People will describe a secret as heavy or weighty, or that we can be weighed down by a secret. And so that's what my original studies were interested in. If people talk about secrets in this way, might they think about them in this way too? Might this language reflect something deeper? And so in those first studies, what I had people do is think about a secret that they were keeping, and then we had them make judgments that we know vary by being actually physically encumbered. And so if you're fatigued or tired or carrying something heavy, you'll judge distances as steeper, or distances as farther and hills as steeper, for the reason that now it requires more work for you to walk a distance or to scale a hill. And sure enough, when people were thinking about secrets, they judged distances as farther, hills as steeper, and tasks as requiring more effort, as if the secret was compromising their resources, making the external world around them seeming to be more challenging to interact with.
About a minute before our break here, if that is the feeling, then is that a sign that you've got to figure out what to do with the secret besides keeping it secret?
Absolutely. So if you feel like a secret is preoccupying you or compromising you in some way, that's a signal to me that it's time to do something different. When we choose to be alone with something, we often do not develop healthy ways of thinking about this thing. And that's what can lead to this harmful rumination.
And because we are literally alone with our secret. That's what makes it a secret.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Yes, we are talking about secrets today on Radio Times. Our guest is Michael Sleppy, and he's Associate Professor of Leadership and Ethics at Columbia Business School. He has been studying the psychology of secrets for some time now, and he's got a brand new book called The Secret Life of Secrets, How Our Inner Worlds Shape Well-Being, Relationships, and Who We Are. And as always on Radio Times, especially with a topic like this, we do want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Do stay with us. Much more to talk about after this very short break, including the difference between secrecy and privacy. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Whisper in your ear, doo-da-doo. Say the words you long to hear. I'm in love with you. Ooh. I've known a secret for a week or two.
How could we resist playing the Beatles when we're talking about secrets with our guest, Michael Sleppian? Michael, right before the break, I said that we were going to talk about the difference between privacy and secrecy, because I think it's a significant one. Help our listeners and help me understand that.
Yes. So this is where the definition of secrecy is really important and will line up with what we were talking about earlier. And so I define secrecy as the intention to withhold information back from one or more people. And so what's useful about that definition is it helps us understand not at all times do we need to act on that intention, and we only need to do so in that rare moment where a secret's relevant to a conversation, but that intention exists before those conversations and it exists afterwards too, and that's why our secrets can seem to follow us around. Now, what distinguishes secrecy from privacy is that intention. And so privacy reflects something that we would be willing to talk about, but only with someone very close to us. Issues around sex, issues around money often fall under this umbrella where we feel like it's not appropriate to discuss in all conversations, but it's not specifically secret either. And so the reason people don't know about things that we consider private is not that we're intentionally withholding them back, but rather the setting has to be right to discuss it.
And obviously the focus on the word intentional, so that we actively withhold this information for all the reasons you've been describing.
Exactly. So what distinguishes a secret from something private is the reason people don't know about this thing about you is you're intentionally withholding it from one or more people.
And as you mentioned earlier, it's the problem isn't necessarily keeping a secret. It's just how we have to figure out how to live with it and not make it the focus of our lives.
Right. And so the hard part of having a secret, it turns out, is not the moments during which we have to hide it, both because those are relatively infrequent and not so difficult. But what's difficult about having a secret is just having to live with it alone.
And is it because it is isolating? If you have this secret, it's the thing that you know that you cannot share or haven't shared with anybody else. So you just feel sort of more alone in the world because of this secret?
Yeah, that's definitely a primary way in which we experience our secrets. To have a secret is to be alone with something. Now, of course, you can have a secret from one person that you discuss with another person.
Right.
And in that situation, you might not feel as alone with the secret, but unfortunately, there's other harms of secrecy too. We can feel ashamed of a secret. We can feel unsure about a secret. We see that the more secrets on our mind, the less certain we feel, the more isolated we feel, and even the more ashamed we can feel.
So what do we do about these secrets that feel so burdensome, that we're so ashamed of?
This is where it's useful to recognize that just because you're keeping a secret from some person or from some people, it doesn't mean you can't talk about the secret with others. And we often forget this, that if you choose someone carefully, you can get the help that you need with a secret while still maintaining it from the other person. Now, sometimes it's right to reveal the secret to the person you're keeping it from, but that also you don't need to figure out on your own. This is something you can talk about with someone else.
I mean, obviously, this is a person you have to trust with your secret, a trustworthy person.
Yes.
And knowing that they will keep your secret, right?
Yep. And so it's some things to know about the person who's more likely to do that. People prefer to confide in people that they see as compassionate, someone who will be kind, empathic, and caring. Also, someone prefers to confide in people who are assertive, someone who will push you to do the thing that you need to do. But perhaps most important to what we're talking about right now, you want to choose someone with a similar set of morals. Hmm. If what you reveal to someone is going to absolutely scandalize them, that's not good, because when someone finds what you just told them to be morally wrong or morally objectionable, they're more likely to pass that on to a third party, essentially as a form of punishment. So you want to choose someone who you think will understand the issue, and that'll help them keep it safe.
Well, let's say someone is having an affair. I mean, the most sort of obvious secret. and you reveal that to a trusted friend. That could become a burden for that trusted friend to keep a secret if they know either who you're having the affair with or who your partner is.
Yes, and this is one more thing to think about when choosing your confidant, that the more people you know in common, the larger the overlap in your social networks. There's this greater potential for the secret now to burden your confidant if they feel now they have to carry it on your behalf, or if they think, oh, great, now I have to think about this major thing that I've been let in on. And so ideally, you're choosing someone who you're not entangling into the problem by telling them about it.
But does it become a burden for that person, or could it become a burden for that person?
Yes. The more that they're going to interact with people implicated in the secret, the more mm-hmm. that secret is going to be burdensome for them.
Let's get Julie to join us. Julie is joining us. She's on line one, and see what she has to say. And Julie, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi, Julie.
My question is about the type of secret that someone doesn't want anyone to find out. Like, my dad lived a double life and had a second family. And my question to your guest is, what is the motivation for that? Like, why wouldn't he have just chosen to end his relationship with my mother and move on with somebody rather than having a secret life and then being so upset when he was found out?
I mean, Julie,
I don't understand that.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot there. Let me just ask you a question. How did you find out about your father's secret family and life?
It's a long story, but in a nutshell, the other woman came to my parents' house. My brother was there. I was not. And she confronted my father. There must have been whatever arrangements they had were no longer working, apparently. And she confronted my mother and my father with photographs. So my thing is, and I am a counselor, by the way.
Interesting.
So I have always just wondered, why would somebody make those choices when you can get a divorce or move on? I just don't understand that.
Yeah, Julie, let me see if Michael can at least take a stab at that. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a tough one.
It is.
I think this is a plot point in Jonathan Franzen's new book, too. And so how does someone find themselves in this situation? That's definitely the bigger question. Once you're in this situation, I can understand being like, well, I don't want to let go of these people that I'm close to, and I don't want to let go of this person that I'm newly close to. I think what is happening here and what's common across this situation and others is people find themselves in very complicated situations, and they don't figure out the best way to handle those situations when they choose to work on it alone without the help of others. And so if, you know, you can imagine having a conversation about this, and any sensible person would be like, this can't continue. Right. You need to take action. But if you're not having conversations about this, you might not understand what are the best ways forward.
Julie, I hope that helps. And I really appreciate the call into Radio Times. And Michael, that gets to this question about our inner lives, right? I mean, whether it's secrets or lies or some form of deception or just the kind of privacy that you were talking about this rich and complicated inner life that we all have.
That's right. And so when things get complicated, it's really hard to effectively work through a problem like this or anything else complicated alone. The way we understand the world around us, the way we understand how to walk through life in this effective way is through conversations with other people. That's how we learn about ourselves. That's how we learn about what the best course of action is. When we're alone with something, it's not very likely that we're going to develop the best way forward or think about the best way to think about something complicated.
I mean, we're always talking to ourselves, right? All the time. We have these inner monologues or even dialogues with ourselves. But you're saying that's not particularly helpful when there's a burdensome secret?
Yeah. And so there are ways you can try to work through a secret on your own that involves trying to figure out exactly why you're keeping the secret and exactly how it's hurting you. And most importantly, how it's not hurting you. But that's hard to do on your own. It's not impossible, but it's a lot harder to do on your own. Whereas if you just brought another person into the conversation, someone you trust, someone that you think can help, they're a different person. They have different experiences and different perspectives. And it can be so easy for them to offer you this useful perspective that you haven't found on your own. It's really hard on your own to find emotional support, to find a new perspective on a problem. We get stuck in our unhelpful ways of thinking, but someone else can easily take us out of that.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We've got some other comments and calls here as well, talking with Michael Slepian. Today on Radio Times, we're talking about secrets, something he has been studying for some time now. He's Associate Professor of Leadership and Ethics at Columbia Business School, and he's got a new book called The Secret Life of Secrets, How Our Inner Worlds Shape Well-Being, Relationships, and Who We Are. He also has a database where he asks people about their secrets, and it's called KeepingSecrets.org. And you can always join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Margos. She says, secrets are used for shame that religion has inflicted on people to stay in line, continuing the need for people to feel bad about abortion. I imagine that an abortion secret is the top five among many women. Let me take that last part, Michael. And on your list of secrets is abortion, for one. What do you say back to Margaret, or Margot, I should say?
Definitely that the things we hold back is certainly a reflection of the environment we're brought up in and what we think it's okay to talk about. And, you know, this issue I find to be so important because of this, because when people feel that they can't talk about this because other people won't accept it, it hurts our broader understanding of how common this issue is. There's a research done by sociologist Sarah Cowan that finds if you yourself are anti-abortion, you're less likely to hear about people in your network having had this experience. And so you don't have the full picture of how common this experience is with people that you know.
And shame is a good way to force people to keep a secret secret, right?
Yeah, because shame is such a harmful feeling, because when people feel ashamed, they think, I'm a bad person. And it's really hard to shake that feeling when you feel alone with it.
Here's an email from Shirley. When raising my children, I never used the word secret, as in don't tell. I use the word surprise. Please don't tell. We want to surprise Dad. Tell me when the word secret is when the word secret is in conversation, it always deals with the negative. And I should add, in your book, you do talk about the positive, the joy, you know, the keeping the secret for a surprise birthday party or something like that, Michael.
Right. And so an intention to hold something back could be about something negative. That's where it's often applied. But we can also use it in these positive domains, too. And so certainly when you're trying to model effective behavior to children, it's important for them to understand when it's okay to keep a secret and when it's harmful, too.
Is there an age at which children begin to understand what a secret is, and I guess the power of a secret, of keeping a secret?
In their earliest years, when they start to understand that they have this inner world that is not necessarily known to others unless shared, children will start trying to keep secrets. Unfortunately for parents, right when they start to figure this out, they're not yet toilet trained. So their earliest secrets involve, you know, things like wetting the bed and wetting their pants. But as children get a little bit older, they understand, yes, a secret is something you can try to use to avoid getting a scolding, to avoid having mischief or accidents discovered. But, you know, by 6, 7, 8, children also understand that they have this inner world that's known only to them that they consider special, and they selectively share that with special people. If you ask a young child what a secret is, they might tell you it's something you would only tell your best friend. It's a much more healthy way of thinking about secrets.
For children to think about it that way. That's interesting.
Yeah. But then by the time they hit adolescence, it's the secrecy that we know as adults, where they're worried about social approval and shame and so on.
I mean, teenagers are notorious for keeping secrets and keeping them from their parents.
Yeah. And so part of it is healthy emotional development, but when they're keeping things like struggles secret or shames, it certainly makes things not better.
My husband and I used to joke when our son was a teenager that he was in the witness protection program, which is why he couldn't tell us anything about his life, because it was completely secret and unavailable to us.
I can resonate on the other side with that. And so, you know, as a parent, what you're trying to do is trying to get these sort of routine disclosures onto the table, just things like what did you do today, to try to get a habit of sharing on you know, in the family space, so that when they actually need help, that they feel like they can open up.
What are some some of the common secrets that the couples share? I mean, we talked about affairs and things like that, but what else were some of the themes that you found?
That people keep romantic partners?
Yeah, in a coupled relationship.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I was just looking at some new data on this question. And so things that I can tell you, the most common secrets people keep from their romantic partners, this information is not available anywhere else.
Oh, we're all ears.
I was looking at it yesterday. The top secret people keep from their romantic partners is having an innocent crush, what they classify as an innocent crush on some person. Then there's the one we talked about before, extra-relational thoughts. This is a little less innocent. But again, it's just a thought. You're having some kind of romantic thought about another person. And then after that, it's things like our relationship history and our sexual history. And those are interesting secrets to keep from partners because people will say it's not that they're holding it back per se. It's that they don't have the drive to talk about it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in some cases, you can imagine those are conversations you want to have. But then you also don't need to get into intimate details of prior relationships either, most people feel.
Is that because they don't? They don't want to fight. They don't want conflict.
I think it's because it's just uncomfortable to discuss. We're not really good at, most people aren't really good at talking about relationship issues and issues around sex. And I think people find it an uncomfortable topic in general, but also within the relationship about prior relationships.
About saying, you know, this was my boyfriend, girlfriend or whatever, and this is how I felt about them, or this is what we did together, things like that.
Or like specific sexual experiences.
And it just feels like a taboo, or it's just too weighty or too fragile maybe.
Yeah, some things other folks have seen, you know, what are taboo topics in relationships, and that can include prior relationships. That can include conversations about the state of the relationship. Again, like those are conversations you so clearly need to have, but for some reason we don't feel comfortable having them. Well, another common one.
No, go ahead.
Another common one, as you might imagine, is current discontent in the romantic relationship.
Well, we are talking about secrets with our guest, Michael Slepian. He's got a new book called The Secret Life of Secrets, How Our Inner Worlds Shape Well-Being, Relationships, and Who We Are. And you can email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Last night I met a woman. You recognize her name. Who in our conversation told me you were her old flame. Well, I didn't want to listen. But as she told me more, I learned more about you than I'd ever knew before. You're keeping too many secrets from me. But baby, now I'm wise to you. You fool me like the others, then I know what you'll do. You'll find yourself a new love and keep me a secret too.
That, of course, is Patsy Cline, and we are talking about secrets. That's her song, Too Many Secrets. And again, our guest is Michael Slepian, and he's got a new book called The Secret Life of Secrets. Let me read an email from Rachel. She says, in third grade, my teacher made a big deal of telling me her middle name. It was a secret. Of course, everyone wanted to know what she told me, and I revealed it. Later, she told my parents I had a problem with confidences. I felt terrible, and 40 years later, feel bad about myself for it. Again, that's a very loaded comment there from Rachel. What are your thoughts, Michael?
That, you know, certainly these things happen. People let information slip. This, you know, I would say that at least in this example, it was not something that, you know, would change relationships that this information came out. But certainly the lesson is, you know, when we're choosing our confidants, how can we choose people who won't become burdened by this information or won't make their lives more difficult? And then if we get confided in, and we find that to be a difficult experience, what can we do about it? And so if you're struggling with what to do with someone else's secret, that's a little complicated. Ideally, you could talk to someone who is totally removed from the person who shared the secret with you and say, here's the thing I'm struggling with. What do you think I should do? You don't even have to reveal who the person is, right? And so you could just choose someone you trust and say, hey, I'm struggling with this thing. You know, what should I do? And so even when it's not your secret, if it's a secret you have to carry, you still might need help with it too.
Right. I mean, what strikes me about Rachel's story there is this was a teacher that told this student her middle name. So here's a teacher confiding in a student. We'll just start there. That seems a little inappropriate. And then once she, as a young person, tells other kids, which seems not unusual, then the teacher tells her parents. And now 40 years later, she still feels badly about it.
Yeah, I hope she can feel better knowing that, you know, it's a common situation to struggle with someone's secret and to feel like maybe you didn't do the right thing. But again, you know, these are things we don't have to figure out on our own. And so if we're struggling with something, even something in the past, like, hey, here's the thing I did, right, and I'm still hurting for it today, that's something that you can still talk about with someone and you can still get help with.
And which leads to the word confession, right? I mean, confession is such a powerful word, but it's also such a powerful interaction. Let's put confession into the conversation here. How do you see it?
Yeah, so now that gets more complicated. Yeah. So it's pretty simple when you're talking about a secret with someone who's removed from it all. Revealing a secret to the person you're keeping it from, when should you do that?
Yeah.
Right. Certainly if the person would say that if this is something they would feel that they have the right to know, that's a reason why you would want to tell them eventually. If it's something that's going to come out eventually somehow, if there's a chance that they could learn it without your telling, then again, you probably want to get out in front of it and have some control over how the information comes out. Now, what should you do if this information could damage the relationship? Right. This is the really hard question. The classic example of this is, you know, you cheated on your partner, and should you tell them? And so there's a few different views on this. You know, one view is that if this was truly a one-time thing and it will never happen again, and if the only reason you want to tell your partner is to make yourself feel better, to lift the load for you, you know, the question is, is that the right thing to do? Are you just going to be putting the burden onto your partner? And so what you want to try to think through is, you know, why do you want to reveal this? Would they want to know?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Would they want to know?
Yeah. And so I've asked people this question. I've asked a group of about 300 people in committed relationships and have them imagine this scenario where your partner's out of town, in a huge lapse of judgment, they get drunk, they cheat on you, they've never done this before, they would never do this again. Would you want to know?
Yeah.
And about 75% of people said, yes, I would want to know. And that number was higher than I expected it to be. And sometimes when I tell this number to people, they say, are those people just fooling themselves? What they really want to know?
Yeah.
Whether or not you think that number is in the right place, at least 1 in 4 people say they wouldn't want to know. And so what this means is this is really complicated. This is such a consequential decision to make in a relationship that there's no reason why you should be figuring this out entirely alone. It's just the consequences are just too great and it can become so complicated. And so again, I would say you really would want to talk about this with someone who could help you think through the different scenarios here and what's the right one to pursue.
Like a trusted friend or a therapist or, you know, someone that's a bit outside of the relationship. How, though, do you suggest people, if they do want to tell, and apparently people do want to hear, how do you broach that? How do you, in a sense, break the ice? Like, can you sort of like what was told to you? Are you sitting down? I need to tell you something.
No, you're so right that what makes secrets difficult, even one that we're ready to talk about, we're often waiting for that perfect moment to bring it up and to reveal it, and it pretty much never comes. And mm-hmm. and so you essentially have to make this situation for yourself. And so a good way to do it is like you mentioned, some kind of flag it for someone, like, hey, I need to talk to you about something. And most people, when they hear that, kind of understand it's something
important,
something with some importance. And so, yeah, something like that. So you don't just totally blindside someone and just like drop this huge thing on the table. But something like that, hey, I need to talk, or maybe even flagging the general content or topic of the area, so it's less shocking when it comes up.
I mean, some secrets go to the grave. I mean, that are never revealed. Is that necessarily a bad thing or an unhealthy thing?
It's something that certainly happens more than I originally expected it to be. These are things that, you know, stories that are shared with me about someone learning something really big, yeah. That their parent never had the chance to tell them, or, you know, that their grandparent never had the chance to tell them. So it's pretty common. Now, it's weird to find that out for yourself when you can't have a conversation with the person anymore. It makes it a little more difficult to think about.
Here's an email. I'm sorry. No, go ahead, Michael. Finish your thought.
You go ahead.
Okay.
No, you go.
I will. Here's an email from Rory. Rory says, my brother and I found out in our 20s that we had a brother born with Down syndrome that had been taken from the family at birth. Both of us grew up not knowing the secret and both hated secrets and being lied to. The energy of secrecy and deception affects people, especially children, unconsciously. That's a very powerful email from Rory. Michael, just the power of secrets, especially when people think that they're keeping them, but especially children have antenna for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, what are the most common secrets. I mentioned the top five. Numbers 6 and 7, one of them is family secrets. And so family secrets are just so common to have. And, you know, eventually they often come out. And so it's a surprisingly common story for someone to find out that there's someone that they're genetically related to that they didn't know about, or they're not genetically related to someone that they thought they were. And the difficulty here is parents, at first, they're trying to protect their children because they think, oh, they're too young, they wouldn't understand this. But what's the difficulty there is there's a point at which they eventually are able to understand it. And so
how do you do that?
When and how? Yeah, right. It's a tough one.
Sure is. Here's another one from this one from Rachel. My ex was a serial philanderer. I once asked my ex if he thought that he's addicted to living a double life and having secrets like a spy. He said yes, and identified with someone who lives life like a spy and found it very exciting to have secrets. That's a fascinating comment there from Rachel, the sort of power of having that kind of a secret.
Right. So there are secrets that we can feel good about, even if other people would react negatively to them. The few things I want to pull out from that example is, you know, we were talking about when should you reveal that you've cheated on your partner. If this is a serial problem, I don't think that's appropriate to keep secret. I think that's a serious problem that shouldn't be concealed in a relationship. But it just goes to show you that people can sometimes feel good about secrets that you would think that they might feel bad about. And it reminds me of the more obviously different kind of secret where it's about something positive and you feel good about it. And those secrets people find easier to manage. And so if for some reason you can feel good about your secret, whether or not you should, people will find that a secret that's easier to keep.
And this idea of this double life, the kind of excitement of a double life, I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine, but nonetheless, I guess for some people that's very adrenaline making, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, I think if that feels familiar to anyone out there, I think that's a good thing to talk about with other people too. I think that we can develop certain ways of thinking about secrets that maybe aren't the best ways.
That is Michael Slepian, and we are talking about secrets. And we have about 5, 6, 7, 8 more minutes. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Before I get back to some of our comments here, is there a different how men and women carry secrets or keep secrets or who they reveal their secrets to?
Yeah, so I was just mentioning I was looking at this data yesterday. This is a new question that I've been looking into. And some of the gender differences we know about so far is, first of all, women confide their secrets in others more than men do. And so men are more likely to be entirely alone with this secret that they keep. And then, you know, there's certain secrets that seem to be equally kept from romantic partners. An innocent crush seems to be a common one for both men and women. But it seems, and this is brand new data, and so I'm still thinking about what it means. It seems that men keep more secrets from their partners than women do. And And I don't know why yet.
I was going to ask you why. I mean, is it that it's so interpersonal? I mean, having a secret or sharing a secret is such an intimate thing to do. I don't want to make broad generalizations about men here, but go ahead.
Right. And so I'll try not to either. But there's this stereotype that, you know, someone who's emotionally open, I think for some people, that stereotype is mixed up with the stereotype of what's feminine. And, you know, there's this idea of this strong, silent type. That's something for men only, this idea that there's some kind of strength in not opening up. Of course, we know from the research that opening up is something you want to do in order to get help with the things you need help with, and in order to have, you know, good social connections and deepen your relationships. Opening up is how that happens.
And it's about strength as well. What about people that tell a stranger? I mean, is there something that for some people that it just feels safer to tell someone they've never met, they'll never say before, but you reveal that the deep, dark secret?
Yeah, this totally happens. And it's for certain people a really useful way of talking about something where, you know, not everyone wants to talk to a therapist. And so someone wants to talk about something that they're struggling with, a complete stranger is actually a good choice, because there's no way that, you know, you can get any of the negative implications of telling someone who could then tell someone else that you don't want them to tell. And so really, most people can say something that you'll find helpful. It turns out that the average experience of confiding a secret in someone, whoever they are, is feeling like you got something useful out of it, whether it's just validation or a new perspective on the problem or some kind of saying, hey, that's tough, you know, whatever it is, people usually feel like they get something out of it.
Here's Susan, who asks, is it more difficult to carry someone else's secret depending on how it's revealed to you? Is there a difference in how you handle a secret that's accidentally revealed to you versus if someone intentionally shares it? Mike, we're almost out of time, but go ahead.
Other people's secrets can be a burden too, and so that's something you want to think about when you're confiding in someone. Accidental versus intentional learning about it, there's no data on that yet, but it's on my list. I've been interested in that one too.
And is there such a thing as an accident? I know some people think there isn't, that, you know, everything is intentional.
I think that sometimes people forget who knows what, and they say like, hey, what's going on with the thing? And they're like, oh no, that's something you're not supposed to know. I think that does sometimes happen. I think as when secrets implicate multiple people, this is when things get complicated.
One more comment. This from Danielle. She says, I literally can't keep a secret for 5 minutes. Do people like that, Michael?
I know people like that too, and I tend not to tell them my secrets. But you know, it's a good thing to know if you have trouble keeping a secret, you know, that could be useful for you personally, where you don't have these harmful secrets to yourself. But it's something you might want to tell someone who says, hey, I want to tell you something. Just a heads up for that person that you find keeping a secret difficult. Maybe they might not want to always confide in you.
Yes, exactly. Well, Michael Slepin, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. His book is The Secret Life of Secrets, How Our Inner Worlds Shape Well-Being, Relationships, and Who We Are. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. We're going to close things out with Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's.